Okay. My name is Dorian, and I am an alcoholic. And I was taught, like Chris, to do first and last name, so that little stutter thing was fight it back. I'm going to take my glasses off and see how I do. My eyes are hyper light sensitive, so that's a lot of light. Woo! You guys look different in the light. Okay. Somebody gave me the God cube. Who passed on the God cube? Thank you. Thank you. I'll set it right here so all I see is God. I'd like to start with this. I always like to start my sponsor until she couldn't sponsor me anymore. I don't know. I was, 30, 31 years sober. Same sponsor. I had heard about people changing sponsors and doing, and the crew I was running with, they were changing sponsors and hunting for sponsors and taking sponsors' inventories and wanting to fucking kill them and, you know. And I watched how that played out for them. And I thought, okay, it's true here. You know, I run. And if you challenge me, I either hurt you or you just never see me again. So one of the earliest commitments I made was I will not change sponsors. I will not. So Angel sponsored me until she just couldn't anymore due to age. But she said, it's not about you. Because I said, what do I do? They want me to chair a meeting. It's not about you. We don't want your mess. We want the message. And I said, what message? And she said, well, start with reading something and then go from there. So that's what I'm going to do. You're not selected because of exceptional talents. Well, fuck. And be careful always if success attends your efforts. Do not ascribe to personal superiority. Can you see the way I even read? It's kind of superior. leveling already. That which you can lay claim by virtue of my gift. And this is the why we were chosen. So this is God answering the drunk's question, why'd you choose me? So the my is not me. It's the big HP. If I had wanted learned people to accomplish this mission, the power would have been entrusted to more eloquent persons. I doubt it. I'm very eloquent. That would have been anxious for the assignment. Well, that's real. For talk is the easiest used of all talents with which I have endowed mankind. If you're new, just hang out with us. Don't worry that you don't know what to say when you call us or you walk up to us. We talk. Just hang out. We talk. If I had wanted scholarly men and or women, the world is filled with better qualified than you who would be available. I have a few degrees. Again, what's the point? Okay. You were selected. Oh, here's the point. You were selected because you have been the outcasts of the world. And your long experience of suffering from alcohol abuse has made you, or should make you, humbly alert to the cries of distress. That come from lonely hearts who commonly suffer what you have survived. Works every time. That's why I'm here. Because I'm an alcoholic. I'm also a person who got here young and who knew, because of the circumstances in my home, that, or I interpreted it as, I was just trash. And I thought, okay. I was also told as a kid I'd be the first ever to get a college degree. I mean, from the time I was really little, I heard that over and over and over. And as a mother in recovery, I did the same thing with my daughter. You'll be the second ever in the family to go to college. And so she got to high school and went on to college, and her friends from high school had begun having babies and getting married and doing that sort of stuff. And at one of their gatherings, one of them said, how come you're not doing what the rest of, and she said, because I'm in college. And they said, yeah, why? And she said, I don't know. All I remember is my mom said, you will go to college. And so she went. So it works. The other thing I was told, or what happened in my childhood, was that, one, I was the first girl in four generations of boys. Thus the name Dorian. Because they just expected another boy. And when the doctor said, you got a girl, my dad thought about Dorian. Ah, just let her have that name. So that's how I got my name. I'm an only child. So those four generations of boys were all these, I call them my idiot cousins. I still call them my idiot cousins, but they're all dead with the exception of one. The only one younger than me, Rob. And he's a sober member in the Contra Costa area. I didn't know until one day I got a phone call from cousin Rob. And he said, hey, cuz. I said, what's up? Now, mind you, I know cousin Rob as my favorite cousin because they lived in San Francisco in the Fillmore district. And so when I would go hang out there conducting business, at the end of the business, around 3-4 in the morning, he had this Plymouth Duster, I think it's the Plymouth, and I had this 73 Mustang Fastback, right? And you see what height I am. He's shorter. And we thought it was the best idea because we were fueled with all day alcohol and blow to race through the streets of San Francisco. That's one of my best memories. So when cousin Rob called, I'm like, yeah, what's up, Rob? And he said, cuz, I'm calling to tell you I'm like you. And I'm thinking, okay, where's this going? There's a lot of aspects to me. I'm not a single line. And he said, I'm sober. And I said, stop. He said, no, really, cuz, I'm sober. I said, why? And he's told me, and I was like, well, I'm glad you're alive. Because that's what you guys said to me. You didn't say you ought to be. You didn't say what took you so long. None of that. He said, we're glad you're alive, kiddo. Sit down. And when you realized it was hard for me to sit down long, you're like, that's okay. And then you started to bring me cups of coffee just half filled. And then when you guys realized that every time I was in your meetings, I was drunk, you said, where else would you be? This is where drunks come to live. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, for not treating me the way I had become used to being treated. Thank you for not throwing me out like the trash. Thank you. No idea where all that shit just came from. Okay, so. Clearly, I'm not one of those speakers who, and anybody, my dear friends that have known me a long time will tell you, it's never the same thing that comes out. There's some pieces that are probably common, but... And that's because Angel always said, I don't know, did any of you know Angel Nightwoods? Any of you? You know, she would always, when she would speak, she'd always say, the moment is now. It's just now. This is the only moment that exists, right now. And if we read the literature, it actually says that. I thought she was making it up. I found all of you suspects, so frequently after meetings, I'd go home, get the big book and the 12x12 and try to prove you wrong or prove that you were lying, you know. But those things are in there. And it's even in there about chocolate for detoxing an alcoholic. I remember when Sassy told me that out in one of the young people's things. I'm like, she's full of shit. So I went and I looked, you know, and I'm like, oh, my God, Sass, it does, you know. But Angel always said, the moment is right now. This is all I'm ever going to have is right now. And so, this is in my head. Right now, what's in my head is, why in the world did they ask me to be the spiritual speaker? If any of you figured out, would you let me know later? Alcoholics Anonymous has been the best experience, the most problematic experience, the most challenging experience, the most gut-wrenching, painful experience, the most embarrassing frigging experience, and the most life-changing experience I've ever had. And I don't know why I get to be here. And I think it's like that said, because I'm a drunk. I know what it means to be treated like trash and thrown out. I know what it means to be sitting there quietly contemplating, where can I go to sleep safely? I know what it means to learn to accept that I'm not going to digest food well. And you guys let me keep coming back anyway. How many people have less than a year here? Uh-huh. I'm so excited you're here. You have been so helpful this weekend. Thank you. I'm so excited you're here. And now I'm going to follow up with this. But I'm not one of those who say you're the most important person in the room. You're the most interesting person in the room. You're not the most important person in the room. And I pray that you keep coming back without a drink. I add the without a drink because they finally, one day I went up because the bulk of 1986, I was the drunk in the rooms. And I went up, there was a beginner's meeting, I went up to this woman that was on the beginner's panel, Linda, and I said, Linda, and I asked her something, and she said, Dorian, when are you going to get that these steps presuppose you're sober to undertake them? I said, that explains something. Oh, okay. So there's a clue. When you go to take the steps, do it without the drink. It works better. It has an effect then. I was also taught that the steps are not quaaludes. If you're drunk of my type, you have a lot of expectations. One is, if I do it, what do I get? And when nothing happens, now we got a problem. Now we have to negotiate me doing the next one. So when I heard they're not quaaludes, I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm not working them for the effect produced. I get that, you know. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and for those of you that are new, understand this. You don't have to want to not drink in order for this to work. Should I repeat that? You don't have to not want to drink in order for Alcoholics Anonymous to work in your life. Does that feel insulting to anybody other than me? I'm an only child. We have personal space things. You need to ask us permission to enter in. AA, don't do that. AA just rushes up on you. AA just wakes you up in the middle of the night and goes, hey, you missed this. Need you to know you're going to need it tomorrow. Okay, go back to sleep. You know, and I'm up pissed. It's like, well, now what, you know? So just know that. Because I did not come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I wanted to not drink. This is how I got here. I was 23 years old, attending Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo. When I change out of this, you'll see my Cal Poly sweatshirt, which is from 1980 when I was at Cal Poly. And my dad died. April is a hard month for me. I almost called Chris to tell him, why did you ask me to do something in April? It's a very hard month for me. And then I heard how that sounded and thought, God, you're still full of shit, Doreen. Not that it's not a hard month, but what does he care? What do you guys care? You shouldn't. It's not your business. But I'm going to tell you about it anyway. So, April 13th, 1983, my father died. I was an only child, raised by a father who was connected. He was a mob-connected guy. That's how he got off the reservation. I am Tana Adam. I am White Owl of the Tana Adam Nation. And on my mother's side, I am Mexican with a lot of Castilian Spanish mixed in. That's who I am. And so, my father, they told me, the sun rose and set in me. And he called me Dory. My mother never wanted to have a child. I am the byproduct of him raping her while he was still married to a different woman, she being the Mexican Catholic, so therefore abortion not an option. He moved her to Sacramento, which is how we ended up there, because they had met in Oakland. And so when I arrived, he raised me. I have very few memories of interacting with my mother. And if you had said, oh, how's your mom? I'd say, oh, you mean the other woman in the house? That's how I knew my mom. So he taught me things, and those cousins taught me things. And but overall, my concept of being loved was solely with my father. So when he died, my belief was, the only person whoever's going to love me is gone. He was the only person who said, you'll be the first in the family to go to college and get a degree. There was all the, gone. And I did what any alcoholic would do. I just threw myself in the bottle. Nobody's ever going to love me again. Nobody's ever going to, you know. And I didn't, it wasn't, and then there was a lot of rage. And so I would, and I remember it was like an audible voice in my head said, no point in going to class again. I was in my senior quarter. No point in going to class again. We'll just drink and do what we do. And I was very addicted. The story, I have the third edition of the Big Book because in 1983, a counselor sent me to AA over at Oso Street. And blah, 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 whatever you guys did, because I drank. Nobody said you had to be sober, so I drank until I got out of the car, went in, and then during the meeting, blah, blah, blah. And then all I'm thinking, all I'm hearing is the bottle saying, hello, we got shit to do, let's go, let's go, let's go. And I tried to get out the door, and this woman literally threw herself in front of the door, and she had a big book. She said, you can't leave without one of these. Thank you to that woman. She knew where the program was. And I said, how much? And it was like $6 and some change in 1983. And I got it. So it's the third edition. And I threw it on the floor of the car, picked up the bottle, right on about my business. But what I was saying is the only story in that third edition. In the third edition, I think it's entitled Dr. Alcoholic Addict. So that lets you know how colorful I was when I got here. And so I would call, because when my dad died, he left me $12,000. He left me that Mustang, and he left me his pearl-handled revolver. That's my legacy. And so I'll say this real quick, and then I'll stop choking on it. The way I paid for Cal Poly, because when you come from a family where nobody's ever gone to college, they don't understand you got to pay for college and stuff, right? And because they chased me out of the house at 17, my dad did, by pulling a gun and shooting at me. The terror that he had inflicted in me from age 12 to 17, the broken bones, etc. Through all that, the voice in my head would say, he's not going to kill me. He's not going to kill me. That day, came through the door, pulled the gun out of that briefcase, and started firing at me. Voice in my head said, he's going to kill me. And that's how I left home, right? And so, and yet my concept was the only person that'll ever love me is gone. And so I had gone into business in order to pay for college. So if any of you had kids attending Cal Poly from 1980 to 1983, or you attended Cal Poly from 1980 to 1983, thank you for your purchases. You paid for my education. Because I'm good at business. Because my dad was good at business. And so given all that stuff, I would be wired. So about 2 in the morning, I'd be sitting down, and I couldn't go to sleep. And the emotions were now way up here. The rage and the abandonment and the sadness and the grief, none of which I had tools to cope with, except the ones that I had in front of me at that time each evening, which was the loaded revolver, made sure there was a couple bullets, not fully loaded, just like 3 bullets in it, and then a baggie of blow with a straw just sticking out of the Ziploc baggie, and then on the stove, a pot of water in which was a bottle of sake, and then a tea kettle with boiling water. And a brandy snifter with 151 in it. This is me. That's how I did things. And if you interact with me now in sobriety, you'll find out I do sobriety the same way I did staying drunk and loaded. All in. I don't kinda. I don't understand kinda. It's in, out. Ain't rocket science, you know. And I'm over the top, and I'm big, and I'm direct. And that's the way I used and drank. And so I was doing that and then playing the deer hunter game, you know, roll it and, right? And at a certain point, it's like, fuck. So I would pick up the phone. Let me tell you, I've never called Alcoholics. Well, before I got sober, I never had called Alcoholics Anonymous. Never been arrested. That means I was good at the business I was in. I say that because at a certain point, I did H&I. You know, because they, at my home group originally was Group 3 in Sacramento, and they were big on H&I, Woody and them, and they're like, you newcomers should do H&I. We find that 75% of people that do H&I never drink again. I was like, odds. I'm down with odds. I'm going to do that. And I love it. Spilling drinks is what we do. And so I called suicide prevention. Because I only have one question stuck in my head. Give me a reason to keep living. So I called suicide, and they'd answer, and I did that. Give me a reason to keep living. And they'd say whatever, and then I'd hear click, click, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hung up. I was not looking to not drink. I had never heard of the word alcoholic or alcoholism. You know, this language we have here, totally foreign. Until one night, one of my favorite chapters, the only story I relate to in the back is Dr. Alcoholic Addict. But one of my favorite chapters in the what I call the meat of the big book is working with others. When a sponsee asked me, says, I got a sponsee for the first time, what do I do? Read Working with Others and follow the directions. They told me, you guys have heard it, there's an answer for everything in life in the big book in the 12 by 12. Don't know how to sponsor? Read Working with Others. Well, in Working with Others, it gives clear directions to us, things like listen, but not to the alcoholic pratter that goes on, because to me, I just hear, rah, 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 me, ah, rah, 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 woe is me. But listen, because for each of us alcoholics, there's a moment, drunk or sober, where the defense is open, shields up like in Star Trek, right? And something can get in there. We listen for that. Well, that evening, I called suicide, give me a reason to live, click, click, Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was this woman who apparently knows that chapter, and she heard something in me, and so she said, would you do something for me? And I said, okay, what? She noticed she could get in. And she said, I want you to go talk to my friend Paula. And I said, okay, where's Paula? And she told me. And being a good speed fiend, I was getting dressed, and she's like, tomorrow. Like, okay, that's the other thing about me to this day. I'm literal, so be literal with me. You know, don't leave out a part, because I'm not going to do it. And she said, tomorrow. So I went and met with this Paula, who apparently knew the chapter Working with Others, too. But this woman didn't tell me she was sending me there because of alcohol. And Paula didn't mention that either. I thought I was going to see a therapist, which made total sense to me. I knew how emotionally damaged I was. Yes, please. And Paula knew, and so she did not ask me questions. To this day, ask poor Raven in the back, who had the joy, whatever you want to call it, of riding with me from El Dorado Hills all the way down here, and then today riding back. I don't do well getting asked questions. Baby boy knows it. I don't. You want to ask questions, ask him questions. Trust, I'll tell you whatever. And if I didn't tell you, then it's not your business. So Paula apparently knew that. She shared about Paula. She talked about herself. I thought, yes, a part of me could live with that. So when she said, come back on, I said, okay. So I came back. It got to a point, my memory is the third or fourth meeting with her. And not once did she say I had to be sober to meet with her either. Right? No, there's no talk about the drinking until this third or fourth time. And she said, I want you to do something for me. I said, okay. I trusted her. Not an easy thing for a person who's been the trash in your life. I trusted her. And she said, I want you to go to this place on Oso Street. such and such an evening at such and such a time. Just go in and attend the meeting. It's a meeting called Alcoholics Anonymous. Just go. And then I'll see you the next day. Tell me how it went. Okay, for Paula, I'll go. Not one speck, not one cell of me internalized it as it had anything to do with me. Paula wanted me to go there for her, so I'm going for Paula. And they say we're not altruistic. Yeah, we are. And so I went. I pulled up in front of this house on Oso Street. Right behind me was the Amtrak station. And already I'm feeling ill at ease because I was raised with money. I'd never been that close to a train station. I'd been in airplanes in other countries the bulk of my life. But a train? You know what kind of people ride a train? You know. So I'm in there judging and drinking. And the way drinking was by then was this. I don't understand ice. It dilutes your alcohol. I see absolutely no use for a blender. I don't get to the point, bottle, cap, off. Drink. And so that's what I was doing. And then I went in, and then, as I told you, that lady blocked my way out at the end of the meeting, and I ended up with the big book. And I went and saw Paula. She said, how'd it go? I said, it went fine. I said, I don't know why you wanted me to go. Because I couldn't find what Paula needed there. I was sure she didn't need you people. Have you seen yourselves? And the furniture was so dingy. It was just the dingiest place. And that was my first experience of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then I faked my graduation from Cal Poly because that was the only acceptable way to leave and go back to Sacramento. So I faked it and I went back to, which wasn't hard. I also owned a graphic design company. I'm very industrious. Solution-oriented, totally got that when I got here. And so back in Sacramento, and I became my father in that household. I went to the household. My mom was still there. And I became my father. And anytime I perceived she was going to get between me and the next drink, drug, or whatever I needed, I beat the shit out of her. I became him. Because I had one priority. More. Now. Get out the way. I wasn't social, if you can't tell. A person like me has no friggin' business doing the bar life. I probably would have gotten stabbed. That sort of thing. So what ends up happening is I end up, long story short, I get sent to a counselor again. No recovery homes, no treatment centers. Again, that was H&I once I'm sober. I'm just a drunk off the street. I'm just that young 25, 24, 23-year-old young lady that y'all don't know what else to do with but to say, go over there, go there, go there. So they sent me to you. And I went to the therapist, that therapist that time, that last time, in 1986. Pierre at the Green Haven Group informs me. It was around March of 1986. And I went to see the therapist to complain. And I walked in, and she was holding the door, and I walked in, and she's there holding the door. I'm barely in the door, and she goes, how are you doing? And I went into this sniveling thing that alcoholics that are drunk can do, and literally just, you know, I'm breaking into pieces right before you because, oh, woe is me, the Al-Anon sleuth. And I learned that by going to Al-Anon. I do not make fun of Al-Anons. We'll get to that. And she looked down at me, and she said, Okay, that's it. You are no longer welcome here. I know you've been going to those AA meetings. And she goes, but honestly, I don't know if even they can help a hopeless drunk like you. But you're no longer welcome here. Just get out. And she threw me out. And she helped save my life. In that instance, and ever since, I've learned that psychology is not the answer for a hopeless drunk. Not when we're still drinking. It is highly useful once sober. You know, the big book talks about psychoses and neuroses. Hello. But she threw me out, and I went to the only place that wasn't throwing me out. A meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just kept coming back here. The first time I went to an AA dance, I was drunk. And that kind of drunk where you could only walk so many steps and then you just kind of melted to the ground. Drunk. I was cute, though. They wanted me. As I said, and the couple people, I became the assignment. Beautiful women would assign their sponsees to go pick up this drunk woman. And one evening, y'all decided to take me to the dance. And so that, and I'd be down there, and the world was still gray and black and brown. Those, I didn't see, and this hand, this cup of coffee would float down. And I'd take a few sips till I could stand up and get on my feet again. So what happened? Because I still was not thinking, I need to stop drinking. I need to get a better life. I need to learn how to live. None of that was happening in here. The thoughts I was having was, why do you people keep bugging me? I stopped answering the phone. Why do you women show up? Don't you get the clue? No, I don't want to get in the car with you. You know why? Because you women, number one, smile. What is that about? And then you laugh. Which was painful to me. And then you would ask really hard questions like, are you hungry? Which you learned very quickly was to ask instead, when's the last time you ate? Because you, looking at me, you could tell. See, I failed to mention I was dancing with the ballet company, too. Anybody knows anything about ballet knows, okay, slam dunk, she's anorexic or bulimic. Slam dunk, she's wired on speed half the time. There was a movie back then, I'm dancing as fast as I can, you know. And so you guys knew that. And so you would say, when's the last time you ate? And if I went, okay, get in the car. And next thing I know, I'd have this. It's the best detox food. So if you have newcomers, you know, that are still kind of drinking most of the time, even if they're not telling you they are, because, ooh, you can hide it and we don't know. Take them to a restaurant and just get them French fries and a chocolate milkshake. Best detox medicine. It straightens you out inside, the starch, the salt, and the chocolate. And the dairy, I guess. I don't know. I think that just gave me the runs. But, and you guys would do that. Until one day, because I kept coming to meetings, I had no place else to go. I wasn't working. I'd given up the business because I'd gotten a phone call that said, do not cross the bridge. We'll let you know when it's safe. Which meant I could no longer go into the bay. And I just kept coming to your meetings. And what happened in November of 1986, see, that's how long I was drunk in your meetings. In November 1986, I was attending the beginners meetings at Group 3, Thursday night, 6 p.m., still is. We're still going. I am now part of that panel. And so, and you can phone in or Zoom in. And, but then, the guy that was doing the presentation, because up until then, I was always like this too. I knew you by your shoes and that stupid laughter. Each of you have a distinct laugh. The guy said, managed to mention he was an attorney, and the voice of the little rich princess, educated, arrogant, entitled, lifted her head, and the voice said, finally, somebody worthy of me listening to. And that's when I started to listen. I don't ever want to forget that. Because not one of us has any idea what that newcomer is going to listen hear. So I don't waste my time trying to throw out pearls or think, how can I get to them, etc. Because I don't know what they're going to hear. And I don't want to forget that. He said he was an attorney. That was the hook. And I started listening. And then I started trying what was suggested in the beginner's meeting, like, don't drink 1 hour at a time, okay? And it got to a certain point, and I'm like, I can't not drink. I called one of you women at I don't know, some god-awful, but early 1 a.m., 2 a.m., because that's when I had issues. And said, you said, what is it? And I said, I don't know how to go to sleep without a drink. And her response was the first time AA gained my respect. Her response was, do you have a refrigerator? I said, yes. And she already knew that some of you ladies had become my roommates. So you had cleared out all my pills. You had cleared out everything you'd heard me mention drinking. So no longer was there rubbing alcohol, cologne, Listerine, cooking sherry. Because I was drinking that in between meetings. I know exactly how much rubbing alcohol you can drink and still drive to a meeting. That's scary. In hindsight, it wasn't then. But she said, okay, you got some juice in there? Yeah, go get a glass of juice. I'll hold on. I said, okay. So I went and I got a glass of juice. This is November 24th, 1986. And I come back and I put the glass of juice down and she goes, and I said, I got a glass of juice. Now what? And she goes, now you have something to drink. Go to sleep. Rocket science! Oh my God! And that, honest to God, to this moment, is the thing I respect the most about Alcoholics Anonymous. Is that you guys know how to say things that my alky head would never think of. I have a sponsor now, Gail. And I called her a month ago because I work. If you're an alcoholic of my type, you know that comes with its own baggage full of problems, like coworkers. And so I called her, and if you're new, pay attention. 35 years, still a problem. Steps ain't quaaludes. So I called her, and I said, ran down what I perceived was the problem. This is after writing about it. What I perceived was the problem, acknowledged that I had a little bit in it, and then asked Gail, Gail Clark is now my sponsor, and then, Gail, what do I do about this? What do I do about this? And do you know what she said? Well, I've known you most of the years you've been sober, and there's something you say a lot, but maybe you need to, me to say, mind your own business. Thought never crossed my mind. When I go to work, just do my job. What? What they're doing doesn't matter? No. Are you paying them? No. Then it's none of your damn business. Mind your own business. What? That's what I respect about AA. Over this weekend, I've listened to you guys. That Al-Anon speaker reminded me of some things. That I was sponsored, what I call old school AA, by Angel. And I was 3 years sober when Angel said, you now have this, because, okay, I'll say this first. I was that sponsee who, I called Angel. I told her she was my sponsor. And then she said, oh, that's nice, honey. I will walk with you. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck that means, but whatever. So what I need to know is, where's your home group? Where do you go to meetings? When are you going to be doing a speaker meeting? What conferences are you going to? I need to know this. I need you to tell me this. This is what I need from you. And she said, okay. And so she would tell me, and I would show up. Wherever she was, I would show up. Wherever she was, I would show up. It kept me busy, because she was busy. And she was all over the place, but I would show up. To the extent that people, her friends, started to notice, and they would go, Angel, do you know there's this young lady just standing there? And she's like, yeah, she just does that. So I got this sponsor, I got this thing. And AA let me keep coming back. And I got to learn here what being alive means. And I got to learn here what value there is in saying good morning. I got to learn here that this is 100% free. When they would pass the baskets when I was new, I would go to, and they'd reach out their hand and say, no, don't put anything in the basket. I said, why not? And they'd say, because if you, we want you to keep your money, if in the event, at the end of these first 90 days, and then they just changed the number as I was sticking around longer, the end of these 6 months, and then, you little cunning, baffling AAs, you. If you decide you want to drink again, that way you'll have money for it. And that's what AA was. They would go to meet with the drunk and take a bottle just to even them out. That's what AA is. AA is not about telling you, you shouldn't drink. That's society doing that. AA is about keep coming back. We trust that there's a spirit of the universe, as described in the book, that knows no time, no limitation. It's here every moment, whether we want it or not. And it's not just here because I'm sober. It's here because you're not. It's not just here because I no longer steal your shit. It's here even if you just took my shit earlier. It's here no matter what. It knows no limitation, which means it has no human quality. To me, that means it has no word. Call it what you want. It doesn't matter. I'm just sharing with you my perception, just a FYI, not dictating to you what you need to do, because that's not my MO. It doesn't care what I think, nor does it care what I want. Which is hard for this alcoholic. I'm an only child. I was daddy's princess. I think that what I want should be God's priority. And one of the most appalling moments in recovery was in a meeting when this guy said, I just learned something, you guys. We're like, what? And he said, when you ask God for something, Sometimes the answer is maybe. And then sometimes it's no. For me, that's the measure of maturity. Can I accept maybe? Can I put forth an honest effort to mind my own business at work? How do I respond to no? So Angel's my sponsor, and I'm walking this path, mostly following her. And I was never taken through the book. What she said was, you know how to read. You're constantly telling us how intelligent you are. So start at the beginning and read. And then I went to mention that to Linda, you know, I'm going to start. And she goes, without a drink. And I'm like, oh, shit, really? Oh, I'll try that. And then Angel said, call me when you're done with the first step. Okay. And I called her pretty quickly. And I said, I don't even need to read it to tell you I've done the first step. She goes, how do you know? And at this point, because my sobriety date, I got kicked out of the therapist November 24th. November 25th, I don't know, but apparently I didn't drink. And then November 26th with the Alcathon, an Angel was speaking, and it woke me up. And everything in me said, I want what she has, right? So then a few days later, so I'm not, I don't know, a week sober, and less than that. And I said, I've done the first step. And she goes, how do you know? And I said, well, because that night, November 24th, when I actually tried to, like, not drink, I realized I couldn't go to sleep without a drink, so I called this lady, and she told me to get a glass of juice, and now I have something to drink, now go to sleep. I said, but I'm pretty sure when I called and said, I don't know how to go to sleep without a drink, that was my admission. That's an unmanageable life. And that's powerless. If I wasn't powerless, I wouldn't have called her. And she said, okay, great, keep reading, do step two. And that's how I went through the steps. In addition, I went to the beginner's meetings. I strongly suggested for anybody beginner's meetings because they break down this program into workable units, things that I need. We're done at 12:30? Okay. And I've stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous, apparently sober, not because I was looking for it. I stayed because of the results I got and that I continue to get. I stay today because I wake up and before my feet even hit the ground, I'm like, good morning, morning, universe. That's what I call it right now. Morning, universe. I get to breathe in and out. Thank you. And then I go through the day and it various points during the day. Some of you may have seen me just sitting by myself over there. It's like I was here in the ocean. It's like, whoa, universe. I love the music you play. Thank you for letting me be able to hear it. And then coming here today and right now in this moment, whoa, universe. Thank you for letting me be alive today. In sobriety, I died in 2014, bled to death in an ER. And my daughter was there with me. I'm going to finish with this. And it had been me and her from the time I was 2 years sober and had her. And she was with me. And for whatever reason, a few nights before, I think it was a fault in our stars or whatever, but as the young lady was that facing death, this Jamaican nurse looks down and said, honey, you get to choose to live or die. It's up to you to make that choice. That floated in as I realized, because the room goes dark when you die, when you bleed out, it just goes dark. And I knew what was happening, and I grabbed her little hand as they were finally rolling me into the OR, and I held her little hand, and I said, "Mama is not dying today." Apparently, I kept saying that into surgery. But in the midst, I'm going to think when I was dead for the bit of time I was dead, what happened was a collective conscious, neither male nor female, no light, no dark, just collective conscious, the universe, the cosmos, whatever. And this voice just said, "Are you done?" And I contemplated that, am I done? I could be done. Done everything I think I wanted to do. And then it dawned on me. I hadn't seen my daughter get married, and I hadn't gotten to be a grandparent. So I decided, and then I decided at that point, no, I'm not done, but those are very selfish reasons. And then I realized I would miss being part of the beginner's meeting and carrying the message. So no, I'm not done. And next thing I know, I wake up in the hospital room, and I get to be here. I understand my purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous is simply to introduce you to a spiritual program, one step at a time, that will show you how to live spiritually. It's going to challenge you. It's going to ask you to do things like not care what they think. It's going to challenge you to do things like tell the truth. It's going to challenge you to do things like let all that material shit go. The promises, there was a young lady here, we were talking, and it came, when I was 6 months sober, Minta showed me the promises of this program, and it's not what gets read in meetings. It starts on the last page and a half in the 12x12 of step 12. But today in well-matured AAs, promise number one, we will be well-matured. I don't know when, but keep coming back. But it goes on and it says we learn things like service freely given, love freely given, obligations squarely met, not bitching and moaning and complaining, not with resentment, and not to get a pat on the back. We keep coming back, and we turn into somebody we didn't even know we could be. So when I was released from the hospital, got home, I said this, "God, I've never even understood why you saved my life anyway. I didn't want to not drink, but you did. And I've always believed I was trash, but you don't, so I get to live. And now I got given a choice, and I said, I'm not done. So you know what, God? Whatever you want me to do, I'm going to do it. I'm going to focus on learning to quit arguing with you, quit questioning, quit debating, and just do it. I now understand what you old-timers mean by trust the process. I get to do that. So I have no idea why I got to be here today, but I thank you for inviting me. Miigwech."